That's great. And so is a breakfast club like a group, like a national group breakfast club? I did speak at another breakfast club, but it was a Rotary breakfast club, if that makes sense.
Right. And this is not a national organization, at least not yet. we certainly would be happy to help in other communities that might want to establish one. When we first got this one started, got together with some friends, and we sort of brainstormed about people in Des Moines area that might be interested. And we came up with a dozen or so names, and we naively thought that we'd pretty much thought of everyone and called that group together, and almost as an afterthought said, by the way, if any of you look around the room and don't see someone here that you think might be interested, why give us their names? And everybody could think of two or three, much to our surprise. And so we grew rather like Topsy from there, and have been going strong now for as long as we have. And I think we can go ahead and get started. I'm going to call to order another meeting of the First Friday Breakfast Club. I want to thank David Cotton for hosting the meeting today. FFBC, I want to welcome all of you who are participating today. FFBC was formed in early 1996, so we are coming up quickly on our 25th anniversary since our formation. In that time, we have raised over $400,000 for scholarships that are granted annually to high school seniors here in Iowa, regardless of gender or sexual orientation or the like, who have done something courageous to teach about LGBT issues or to reduce homophobia in their schools and communities. We have had countless speakers, notable speakers, from all over the country, in fact, from all over the world. We have a monthly newsletter that we put out, most of which is written by members of our breakfast club. For those who are paid members, the monthly newsletter comes with it. If you are not a paid member but you would like to subscribe, all you have to do is let me know. It's subscription is $15 a year, and we'd be glad to include you in our mailings. We also have a website where you can access audio recordings of our past speakers and other resources on that website. FFBC is also a designated organization or agency through the United Way. And any of us who are contributing to United Way, when we fill out the little form, we can on that form go down to where it should go and designate the First Friday Breakfast Club. We're not funded by United Way, but under their donor direct program, people who are contributing to United Way can designate First Friday Breakfast Club, and we are an eligible recipient. I want to also acknowledge and thank Ascendant Wealth Management and Brad Holland and Joe Rates, who are picking up the tab for our online reservation system, as well as our online payment program. It's been a tremendous help, and it's going to make us more efficient and provide even a broader reach than we have had in the past. I have just a few announcements I want to turn to. One is our next meeting of the Board of Directors. That will be next Tuesday, the 10th, at 6:30 p.m. Anyone who is a member who would like to participate in that meeting would be welcome. Just get in touch with me or David Cotton, and we'll give you the necessary information for participation. Our next copy deadline for the newsletter, for those of you who may want to contribute, and as well our regular contributors, get your copy to me or to our editor, Wade Peterson, by November the 16th, which is a week from next Monday. That's our next copy deadline. So if you have something on your mind and there's plenty to go around right now that you might have on your mind. You're certainly welcome to contribute some copy if you get it to me or to Wade by November the 16th. next, Jordan Mix of Iowa Safe Schools. Jordan, are you on? Well, if he gets on, he had an announcement to make on behalf of Iowa Safe Schools, and we'll, if he gets on and I see that, I will call on him a little bit later to make his announcement. We are needing some volunteer help. We could use some volunteer IT assistance, in particular with managing our website. We're right now sort of overburdening Nicholas Williams, who's our IT person right now, and we could use some additional volunteer help. So if there are those of you who had some IT skills and you'd be willing to help out on a regular basis in the management of our website, that would be much appreciated, and you just need to get a hold of me. Are there any other announcements that need to be made? Hearing none, I'm going to turn to Byron Huff to introduce our speaker this morning. Byron?
Good morning. Can everyone hear me?
Yes, I can.
Okay, good. like it when technology works.
Yes.
Well, it's my pleasure to introduce Jane Clementi. Jane co-founded the Tyler Clementi Foundation alongside her husband, Joe, because she wanted to make sure that our society learned the consequences of discrimination and bullying, as she learned all too personally through the loss of her son. A native of New Jersey and devoted mother of three sons, Jane speaks passionately to parents and community leaders about the need to not merely accept or tolerate children who come out as LGBT, but to embrace them as wondrous creations of God. Jane, a registered nurse, speaks on the needs of parents of LGBT children to come out and speak openly of the love they have for their children. In doing so, each one of us can impact the world through world around us and creating accepting environments. Jane has spoken before the U.S. Congressional Help Committee, the National Cathedral, and numerous other faith communities, colleges, universities, high schools, and workplaces. I take my pleasure to introduce Jane, so give her a warm welcome.
Thank you. Oh, and some hand claps too. Thank you so much. Thank you, Brian. And now I can add First Friday Breakfast Club to my long list, right? I love that. So thank you all for inviting me. I'm really grateful to be able to be present in Iowa and still keep my feet in New Jersey, thanks to the technology of modern technology of the cyber world, which has good uses for sure. As was stated, I am co-founder of the Tyler Clementi Foundation, which is working to put an end to all online and offline bullying in schools, workplaces, and faith communities. For me, bullying is a very personal issue, because for those of you who might don't know, or maybe who have forgotten, my son Tyler was the Rutgers University freshman who made national headlines after he had been targeted in a cyberbullying incident in the fall of 2010. Tyler's roommate live-streamed Tyler in a sexual encounter with another man, and then he posted about it on social media, telling all about a very private moment and announcing that private moment to the entire world, or at least so Tyler felt and thought. He was humiliating Tyler in front of his new dorm mates. And the worst part is, I believe Tyler's roommate did this simply because of Tyler's sexual orientation. Tyler's roommate used one of the God-given traits that made Tyler special and very precious, but also unique and different from his roommate. And it was that difference that Tyler's roommate used to put Tyler down among his new peers, his new dorm mates, trying maybe to make himself more important or seem more cool in front of his new dorm mates or more popular. I'm not really sure what he was trying to achieve. But I do think there was one thing he didn't do, and that was give any thought or consideration to the harm or to the expense it would cost another human being. To my son, who was in my opinion, a very thoughtful, kind, caring young man who was smart and creative and good-natured, easygoing. He had many gifts and talents that the world will never know, because as Tyler kept reading those jokes and comments on social media, Tyler's reality became very twisted and distorted, and he lost sight of just how special and precious he was, as well as the resources he had available to him. Because as I have learned all too personally, when you are in that dark, lonely, desperate place, you often can't see the resources that you have available to you, or that you have around you. And it was at this dark moment that Tyler made a terrible decision, one we will never be able to change or undo, a permanent decision to a very temporary situation. On September 22nd, 2010, Tyler died by suicide. Tyler was only 18 years old. And as much as Joe and I wanted to go back and change Tyler's actions, the reality was we couldn't. So instead, we put our energy and actions into making sure that no one else would ever have to suffer the pain, shame, or humiliation that Tyler experienced. And that's why we started the Tyler Clementi Foundation, to put an end to all bullying, online and off. Small little area, right? But we started out very small with awareness programming, sharing Tyler's story, as well as simple measures that can be taken to create a culture shift to one of kindness, civility, towards empathy for everyone, which is simply trying to see the world through someone else's eyes, which means trying to see it through their lived experiences, not your own. So it takes a vivid imagination sometimes for some people. As well as we wanted to encourage many to live by the golden rule, doing to others as you would want them to do to you. Something Tyler didn't experience, but something we wanted to make sure other people did experience. And it's not despite our differences, but rather because our differences should be respected and celebrated. It was at this point, after Tyler's death, that I learned so much more than I ever wanted to know about unwanted aggressive behavior that involves a real or perceived power imbalance, which is the general definition of bullying. But what I learned is that there's a definition in each state has their own definition of what bullying is. Because since 2010, each state has their own anti-bullying or HIB, humiliation, intimidation, and bullying legislation. And it's usually focused on school-aged children. And what's really important to me to identify is that bullying behavior doesn't magically disappear at 18. We may call it something else. We may call it workplace harassment or intimidation, but it is the same harmful behavior. And that behavior is nothing new. That repetitive, aggressive, hurtful behavior has been around for years. With words, physical actions, social interactions, microaggressions. But now we actually have a new weapon in our arsenal, and that is the words or pictures that are used against someone else in the cyber digital world, or the internet, text messaging, emails, social media. And although all methods of bullying cause great pain and can attack and destroy someone's spirit, there are a few significant differences with cyberbullying that I believe sets it apart and likely exaggerates the harm from that of traditional bullying. The volume of people who see what is happening is exponentially larger in the digital world. You know, if it was happening in the school, in a classroom, or even on the playground, it's seen by maybe 30 or maybe 50 kids on the playground. But in the digital world, if something goes viral, it can be seen by thousands or hundreds of thousands of people, as well as the sense of anonymity. That often adds to the harshness. People think they can hide behind a handle and nobody knows who they are. Or even worse, you say things because you can't really see the pain in someone else's eyes by what you are writing. And most importantly, I think what really exaggerates it is that the fact that once someone put something in the cyber world, the target almost becomes their own worst enemy because they continually log in to read what is happening. This is something that we thought happened with Tyler for sure. And this was 10 years ago. So there was, he didn't have a smartphone. It wasn't like he could even look into it, every moment, but he had to be by his laptop and connected to Wi-Fi, which also wasn't very prevalent then. He had to be in the dorm room or in a community space that had Wi-Fi. And even with that, in the short 48 hours or less than 48 hours, he logged in to these posts 60 times, I think, in the range of that, as well as taking screenshots of those posts. So he was looking at them and reading them constantly. It was the last thing he looked at before he left for New York City on his laptop. And I think seeing that and not being able to get out of that downward spiral is really problematic within the digital world. But I always like to say that, you know, it's not technology that's the problem. Technology is a great, useful tool, right? It's connecting us from New Jersey to Iowa this morning, and I think that that's great. It connects family and friends quickly. And that's how it was intended to be used, as well as it's now used as a lifeline and a resource for many people who don't feel connected to people in their physical surroundings. I know the Trevor Project uses it, text messaging for online crisis intervention now, because many youth, that's the language they like to speak, text messaging, not even to make a phone call. Trevor also has a great community called Trevor Space, which is a safe chat room, a closed chat room that youth can connect with people all over the country. I don't know if it's international. I know it's within the country. In case they don't feel supported by the people in their physical surroundings, they can get that support in the chat room of Trevor Space. And there are several other organizations that do that as well. I know Trevor is a big national organization. So with that, we have to remember that technology is only as good as the people who use it. And it can be a useful tool designed as it was designed, or it can be a weapon of great harm and destruction, as it was in many young people's lives today, including my son. And it could be as well in young adults and adults as well. We think that it's really important that we use the digital world as it was intended. It's not going to go away. It's here to stay. It's unrealistic to think that we can live without it. I think what we need to do is learn to tame what I think is today's generation's Wild West, you know? It's using it to reflect our true character in all the spaces that and places that we enter into, including the digital world. And it's important for us as adults to set good examples and be good role models as the true leaders that I'm sure all of you are in your businesses or in your professional world. We need to make sure that our words and actions on social media reflect positive issues and discuss issues and not attack people's character. And it's not about a political situation. I have many people that are like-minded in my political views, my personal views. And let me tell you, they are very mean and attack the character of other people equally. And when I look at that, even though I might laugh because I am in line with their views possibly, when I really think about it, it's like this side and that side, they're both putting out horrible comments into the world. And we need to learn how to have civil, respectful, diplomatic conversations about issues and not attack people's character. I think if we can shift to that, we can have conversations that can actually solve problems instead of just building walls and barriers. We can build bridges, which is what's so important. And one helpful tip I find is that before you send a message out, whether it's a text message or a post on social media, that you take a moment and just take a breath and you reread what you're writing. And if what you're writing builds someone up or speaks to an issue, then I encourage you to send it out into the world. But if it's just tearing someone down and attacking someone's character, I would hope that you would rewrite it, or at the very least, maybe even just discard it and delete it altogether. And certainly don't keep repeating terrible posts. You know, if you read it and you don't agree with it, just delete it. Don't keep sending it out into the world. But wherever I do talk, I always like to stress also that not all incidences of bullying have the same extreme and devastating ending like Tyler's. But with that said, I also must acknowledge that all power imbalances and struggles of bullying behavior absolutely hurt at the time and usually leave deep, painful physical and emotional scars that do usually last a lifetime. I mean, I've spoken in many places. I've spoken at schools. I've spoken in many workplaces. And oftentimes when you meet in person, you can have conversations with people afterwards. And people come up to me that are in their 60s, my age, or 70s, and they'll go right back to third grade or sixth grade. And they know that the person that was being the aggressor, they can repeat the entire incident to me over and over again. So that to me is a lifetime scar that's left a mark on a person for sure. I can't even remember sometimes what I ate breakfast yesterday. So if you can recall back that many years, that's a significant life experience. And we want to make sure that we prevent those life experiences and make sure that the life experiences are positive to look back on and not negative. So that's why one of our very first initiatives was in creating safe spaces was called our Day One campaign. That's an easy, effective tool to prevent bullying before it happens. Day One is a downloadable script that empowers leaders to set clear and acceptable boundaries for behaviors and words within a group or community. And we started it mostly within schools and youth because we think if we can change young people's behavior and get to the root of the problem early, then we know that we can have a long-lasting difference into the world. We initially started our first Day One script for schools, and I just would love the idea that if every teacher or principal in every classroom or school stood up on the first day and declared that we value everyone here in this classroom, in this school, and it is not acceptable to humiliate or intimidate anyone in this classroom for any reason, not because of the color of their skin or their abilities or their lack of abilities or who they love or what gender they identify as or what language they speak at home, whatever makes them special and precious. It's just such a simple idea, just setting those boundaries on that very first day. But I do believe it's a very important action for every child, for the child that needs to have their boundaries set, as well as for the child that is different or marginalized. They need to hear it too. For them to hear that they are welcome and that they will be included in this group or space and no one will be allowed to target them here, I think that's an amazing experience for every person, not only just a child, but I do believe it's an essential message for all of us, that you are welcome here, you are safe, you will be protected here, perfect, just as you are. No need to change who you are, just be your true self. What an important message to hear. As I said, we started these scripts for classrooms knowing that if you identify behavior early and change it, it will have long-lasting effects, as well as the fact that to making sure people are aware that all bullying situations are actually a mental health situation and that both the aggressor and the target need resources and need our support. And that's something that we really like to stress. It's not something that needs to be punitive where we punish someone or expel someone, but it's rather about changing behavior to create a safer, more inclusive world. We have scripts now, though we started with classrooms, as I said, but now we have scripts for all many other communities, such as workplaces, sports teams, fraternities. We've even started including some faith communities. We have a Christian Day One and we have a Jewish community Day One. We believe that mostly the faith communities, day one scripts are focused mostly on primarily on focus on LGBTQI plus inclusion in faith communities, because we do think that that is a stem root cause of some of the bullying that is occurring in our world today. And then, of course, once we've created a safe community, we ask individuals to pledge to be an upstander, because that's what we saw right off the start, is that we realized that there are more than two entities in a bullying situation. There's the person that's doing the bullying or aggressive behavior, as well as the target. And usually there are bystanders that are watching. And what we wanted to do is turn those passive bystanders into active upstanders. We wanted them to stand up and speak out when they see someone being humiliated or harassed. But of course, we never, ever, ever want anyone to come into harm's way, especially when talking to youth. I stress this enormously. It's really important. So if someone feels safe, or if they know the people involved in the incident, it's essential to intervene or interrupt the situation in some way by speaking up. If it's even just calling out the behavior, calling out the words — we don't use racial slurs here, I don't find using homophobic words humorous, you know, cut that out — or it might even just be simply walking up to the person being targeted and walk them away from the situation, walk them away from the aggressor. And of course, if that doesn't change the behavior, or if you don't feel safe intervening or interrupting, our message is always to report the situation, to share it with a trusted adult for youth. And certainly if it's happening in the workplace, there's human resources, and there's a whole chain of resources available in the workplace. It's important to know that if you're telling an adult, if you're a youth, that it's not tattling if you're telling it to protect someone else. And we need to differentiate that difference between whether it's gossip or whether this is healthy conversation. If the basis of the conversation is to help someone, and you think who you think is struggling, then it's not gossip. It's important to know that. It's important to know the difference between harmful behaviors and to report those behaviors, even if it's an individual asking you as a friend to keep it something private. I'm telling you really important information, and I want you to keep it private. And if that information is something simple, like, oh, I have a crush on someone or whatever, we tell youth, well, that is information that needs to be private. But if another youth confides in you that they're going to do some self-harming behavior, or if they seem extremely sad, or if they are even confiding in you that they're going to take their own life, which sometimes people do reach out to some key people asking to keep it private. I've heard so many stories from from youth that have shared that with me, and that they are so glad that their best friend did not keep that private. They understood that this behavior needs to be reported to an adult. That's essential. It's also important to know that talking about these difficult topics of mental health issues like depression or bullying or suicide, it does not increase their prevalence. We need these healthy conversations around these topics to help reduce the shame and the stigma. And that will hopefully break down the barriers so people can find the resources that they need to get the help that they need. And most importantly about being an upstander is step three, which to me is to speak to the target. Let them know that you're there as a friend. Let them know that where their resources are, because as I said, sometimes when you're in that dark place, you can't find your resources. I do think if someone had reached out to Tyler, I think it would have made a big difference. To our knowledge, no one reached out. Many people saw what was happening in the digital world, and many of those people in the digital world were actually in the dorm or on the Rutgers campus. So there were many people that could have seen what was happening and intervened in some way, which is where we came up with our upstander. And we started that by having an upstander pledge. And 2 years ago, we had a goal set to reach 1 million upstanders by the October of 2020. And I am excited and happy to tell you that we actually have reached 1 million upstanders, which is really exciting. Except unfortunately, I think the work is still far from being completed. Even reaching 1 million people, there are many more people that we need to reach with our message, as well as the fact that you have to reach back out to even those that have signed it, because it's not a one and done thing. I put my name to this pledge and I'm going to do it continuously. It's a conscious effort every day to live as an upstander, to be able to intervene, to be a good listener, to be a good observer, and to have courage enough to stand up and speak out. And we do want to end all online bullying experienced by youth, but as adults as well. So whether it's happening in schools or because of legislative inequalities or because of religious dogma caused by teachings and traditions that devalue the human spirit and cause so much pain and despair. And that's where our main focuses are. And that's why we chose to focus on schools, workplaces, and faith communities. We have several programs, and I do just want to give a few brief synopsis with the couple of minutes that I have left to me. First, we do have a wonderful youth ambassador program. So if any of your youth that are applying for scholarships or you know any youth, please let them know about our youth ambassador program. It's an educational program that empowers youth to make differences in their schools. So it's interesting how we both are working together in that we want to see change within the schools. We want to create safe, inclusive spaces in all high schools. And we think we can do that with a grassroots effort. Sometimes you can change from the top down, which is our day one, and sometimes from the bottom up, which is our youth ambassador program. Our True Faith Does a Bully initiative, which is near and dear to my heart as a person of faith, is focused right now on a letter writing campaign to selected leaders in the Southern Baptist Conference. We are sending letters to those key leaders sharing the pain and despair that their teachings have caused, with the desire to help them realize that they must stop teaching that being gay is a sin, because it is not. And we are also making all the letters public on our website. So please go to our website or on our social media platforms as well, because we want youth and parents sitting in those pews to know that there is a huge network of support for them. We are getting letters from key leaders as well as individual people. We want people of faith to share hope, life and love, as we say, with others. And that doesn't mean that you need to leave your faith to support your child. And that's what's key for our work. It's not an either or situation. And we are always looking for people to share their stories. So maybe someone out here on this call today might have a story or want to write a letter for us. So please reach out. We've done 20. We started about at the end of June and we've sent a letter a week. Last week we sent one from Bishop Gene Robinson, and this week we're sending one from Mel White. So we've gotten some really great voices, and we've had other voices that were unknown until they shared their letter with us. So please consider that. Currently right now, our legislative advocacy is mainly focused on the passage of the Tiger Clemente Higher Education Anti-Harassment Act. This is legislation that was originally introduced in the fall of 2010 by New Jersey's governor, New Jersey Senator Lautenberg, in response to Tyler's death. And it has been reintroduced into every Congress. It's legislation that would require institutions of higher learning to have policies in place to prohibit harassment of enrolled students by other students, by faculty, as well as by staff. And it's based on actual or perceived protected classes, which is why it seems to not be able to get passed anywhere in Congress or any further into being a bill. Those protected classes would include race, color, national origin, sex, disability, sexual orientation, and gender identity or religion. And it seems that not everybody is wanting to protect all of those protected classes. And this current piece of legislation also that was just reintroduced has a component that would explicitly prohibit behavior often referred to as cyberbullying. So there is a component in this one. It keeps getting tweaked slightly, but that's the basis of that piece of legislation. It's about initiating or expanding and improving programs that prevent harassment of students, provide counseling for both targets and aggressors, as well as educate and train students, faculty, and staff. And just to transparent about, we've had many partnerships and financial support, as well as help getting our message out over the years. Our best partnership, our biggest ally, is the Rutgers University, where they have a Tyler Clementi Center for Diversity Education and Bias Prevention. It's working on research to help create safe, inclusive spaces and institutions of higher learning, and we are very grateful for that partnership. And we've had partnerships in the past with AT&T, and the All-American Film Festival and Siena College, raising awareness programs in the form of a film produced by high school students, supporting by research done by Siena College around cyberbullying. Last year, actually, AT&T also created a scholarship in Tyler's name. And we were fortunate and blessed also many years ago in around 2012 that the Point Foundation also created a scholarship in Tyler's name, fully funded by the Point Foundation. All they asked was our permission to use Tyler's name. And that was really very kind and sweet of them. And our Point Scholar was funded for 4 years at Pratt Institute in New York. So I did get to meet him several times. And he actually helped us create our logo too. So it's amazing how partnerships and there's other ways of supporting an institution or an organization. And by using his graphic arts skill, he helped us create the T with the circle around it, which is like the C upside down with arms, embracing the T, and it also kind of looks like an on-off button of a computer. So we're putting an end to that by turning off the computer, just temporarily, not forever, but to get out of this space of a harassment. And lastly, I'd like to share one amazing gift that helps us raise awareness. And that's a beautiful piece of choral music called Tyler Suite. I'm not sure if anyone is familiar with it. It was commissioned by the San Francisco Gay Men's Chorus and 6 other gala choruses from around the country. And it was organized by Tim Seelig from San Francisco Gay Men's Chorus, and Stephen Schwartz worked together. And then Stephen Schwartz engaged he wrote one of the movements, but he engaged 11 of his friends, of the best known composers of our time, one librettist, and then the rest were composers for the music. And it is truly a beautiful piece of music that has been performed all across the U.S. thanks to many of the gala choruses, as well as several smaller community choruses that have performed it. It's not quite the time for choral music, I know, but I think when it is safe to return to in-person events, my hope is that it will once again be performed. I think if you are interested in listening to it, it is on YouTube. Many of the choruses have put up their recordings on our website. Also, it was performed at the Lincoln Center. That was a group of people that came together from all over the country. So several of the choruses that had performed it came together. So San Francisco Gay Men's Chorus members were there. New York City Gay Men's Chorus, several members were there. There was a community chorus in North Carolina that sent up 20 members to sing. And it was a huge, beautiful performance. And that's on our website. And you can listen to that. I must say, I don't think it's been performed in Iowa yet. So I don't know. Do you have a gala chorus in Iowa? If you do, please, when it's time in the future, listen, and maybe it can be performed somewhere in Iowa, which would be amazing. I think the middle of the country hasn't performed it as much. It was sung in Omaha, Nebraska, and it was sung in Kansas City, I think on the Missouri side, though, but Kansas City, and they partnered with a chorus from Minneapolis, I think. So it was sung in both places. So just putting it out there, have a good listen. And I do hope you will be inspired to take action and create safe and inclusive and respectful spaces wherever you are, whether it's at home, work, faith communities, but especially in the digital world, which for us, using social media wisely and for good would be to follow us and like us on Facebook, follow us on Twitter. We're also on Instagram if you'd like to follow that, and most importantly, go to tylerclementi.org and be an upstander, pledge to be an upstander and not a passive bystander. So thank you so much. I think I finished just in time.
That's really wonderful. There is opportunity for questions or comments. If there are those who have a question for Jane or want to make a comment, now would be the time. Yes, Rick.
Thank you, Jane, for being here and for all the work you've done. I am just so pleased to hear all the wonderful things that you've been mentioning. And I think you also need to know that the Des Moines Gay Men's Chorus has performed the Tyler Suite right here in Des Moines.
How did I not know that?
I do not know, but it was held either last 2 Marches ago at the end of the month.
2018?
I think so, yes.
I wonder where they got the music, since we are the ones that give out the music.
Well, I do not know how that happened, but it was performed and very well received, and it was very well performed, and it was held at Cheslow Auditorium at the Drake University. And we had a large crowd, and it was really, really well received. So thank you for that. My question for you this morning is that I actually have 2, but I'll just ask one. The University of Northern Iowa right now is in an interesting place because there is a student group there of evangelicals that would like very much to create an organization on campus that discriminates against LGBT people. And the student government is not allowing them to have this particular organization on campus because it doesn't fit their diversity issues and their ideas on diversity within the university. So it's actually might end up actually going to the Iowa Supreme Court before this is all over. So my question is, where would you stand on a situation in which a university is trying to create a special space for discrimination against LGBT people? Because you've obviously had a lot of work with the university at Radcliffe and other places. And, how do you see a breakthrough in that?
Yeah, that is a difficult situation. And actually, most places, it's just sort of the opposite in that many high schools or middle schools are not allowed to have gay straight alliances or something in that. That is a name specific to GLSEN. And so not everybody calls it that because they're not all chapters of GLSEN, but you get the idea. So what they do is they ban all clubs and activities, so that they can't have a GSA. And that, you know, is just horrible, because we know that if the school has a GSA, the environment is not only safer for their gay students, their LGBTQ plus students, but also safer for all students. So all self-harming behavior is reduced by having a GSA in that school. And I would imagine that it's going to come down to education of people, knowing that the benefits of having more inclusive organizations as opposed to excluding people, which is why I love the idea that your first Friday invites all males, male-identified people, to your club. It's a safe space for everyone and a safe space to explore maybe your sexual orientation as well, and getting support to coming out. So I guess would that be going to the Iowa Supreme Court, I suppose, not the federal Supreme Court?
It's possible that it could go to the Iowa Supreme Court. Because it's a state university. And so, it might ultimately end up there depending on who wants to litigate it that far. right now it's just an on-campus thing, but it's creating all kinds of conversations.
Right. And conversations are good.
That's
conversations are good. And that helps raise awareness, too, of the harms of an organization like that, that would be exclusive. And hence why our work in faith communities is so important, because as one of our board members, Mitchell Gold, likes to point out, that's the root of, at least in his heart, LGBTQ bullying. People are bullied for many, many reasons, and we'd like to address all of them. But I think if we can get to the root of the problem for LGBTQ bullying, I think many of the others will also dissipate as well, if that makes any sense. So, yes, I think it's about conversation and education, and hopefully the school will have good litigators on their side as well.
I agree.
Supporting. And the thing is that there will be space if we, and that's sort of like our First Amendment. We want freedom of speech, right? I want to say what I want to say. So that means I have to allow other people to say what they want. But I think there's a great quote, and I'm forgetting who says it, but it's certainly like, we can agree to disagree as long as your disagreement doesn't affect my right to exist as a, my humanity. And that's what we have to make sure, that someone else's speech doesn't harm someone else. And my hope is that, as well as with my work in the faith communities, is that we need people to stand up and walk out of the pews, and those churches will dry up and be withered away and be cut from the branches, so to speak, if you're a Christian. Because there is enough places, safe spaces to worship that is inclusive, and that everyone is around, can gather around the table, and no one has to, receive the crumbs that fall off the table, because that is not acceptable. And maybe, allowing an organization like that to be on campus, no one will, if the school is doing their job right, no one will want to participate in that organization, right? Because they'll want to be, more about inclusion and diversity and welcoming of everyone, making sure people are aware of the harms of that organization.
Are there others who have questions or comments?
Yeah, Jonathan, I've got a comment. I just want to say thank you for writing to the Southern Baptist Convention. I'm a Southern Baptist boy. It was so confusing to go to Sunday school and learn about, Jesus, who loved everybody and cared for everyone, and then go to the main sanctuary and have a hell and brimstone preacher. And as a gay kid, I didn't really understand, very young. And then as I became a teenager, I'm sitting there going, okay, why am I here if I'm hearing from this preacher that, God hates me, I'm an abomination, there's no hope for me. I mean, I couldn't wait to get the hell out of religion at 14. Now I have religion with a side eye everywhere I go. But I'm seeing some changes within that denomination. It's very, very slow going. But I think, if they're losing as much as other mainstream denominations are losing enrollment. But just thank you. I don't think, my parents didn't know I was gay, so they didn't know what they were putting me through. And I think in some religion, that's happening to a lot of kids. They don't, haven't come out to their parents yet, and their parents are dragging them to a church that just tells them, you are worthless. And that's what is so sad. I don't know how that gets addressed, because my mother, when I bring it up to her, well, I didn't hear that message. Like, because it wasn't directed at you. It wasn't a direct attack at you. That's why you didn't hear that message. So that's a big problem within the church. And some are getting better. Some are going backwards. But I just want to thank you for the attempt, and good luck.
Thank you. And so much of what you said is so much of, my story and Tyler's story. Because I was just talking to someone yesterday, and if I had known then what I know now, I would certainly not have been taking my children to that church. And just like your mom, a lot of the messages I wasn't even hearing, because they were not a fire and brimstone kind of church, but we were attending an evangelical church. And in the message, there would be many, many points, and I would be hearing the points that I think were speaking to my heart and things that I needed to change. And sadly, after Tyler passed, they did preach two times against, one was really more against marriage, because in New Jersey, marriage was at a point in 2012, I think it was, where the governor could have signed it into law, but instead he didn't at the time. It was Governor Christie, and he didn't sign it. It went to the Supreme Court in New Jersey, and then it became law. And at that point, the pastor seemed to be wanting to talk about marriage, and civil unions are fine, but not marriage. And here I am sitting, and at this point, I'm like, no, what are you saying? I'm hearing this. Like, am I really hearing what you're saying? And it was at that point shortly after that I did move on to another church. And it was too, also, I mean, I'm still finding so many things out. I recently just moved, and I packed up our old home. And in doing that, I was packing many of Tyler's things away still, sadly. I guess I didn't deal with death so well. As I was here, I started going through some of those papers and finding the pain and anger at moments of that Tyler documented on pieces of paper. That pain of being in the closet was something I was so totally not aware of. And I don't think, unless you've lived through something, you don't know it, or unless somebody shares it with you. And that's why I'm here, to try to share it with parents so that they don't make the same mistakes that I did. Because there's a long pile of lists of mistakes made, for sure. But I do think that if people don't intend to harm other people, and that's why we're trying to raise the pastor's ideas and make them aware of the pain that they're causing. They think that that is love, but that's not love. That's not how you show love, by causing pain, because that is extremely, it's heartbreaking to read some of the things that I've just uncovered recently.
Wade, did you have a comment or question?
Yeah. Hi, Jane. My name is Wade Peterson. I just retired from 33 years of teaching high school here in Iowa, but I'm also an administrator for the Des Moines Gay Men's Chorus.
There you go.
And since the pandemic hit, we had some time and resources to devote this past summer to developing an entire online course and curriculum that we could offer to high school teachers here in Iowa. Lots of different units, kid-focused, focused for GSAs, for since we're a music organization, also for music teachers, we were able to kind of also blend our music and performances and songs within it. But I did want to let you know that, the Tyler Clementi Foundation is a key part of our resource section that we make available to students and teachers. And we've been working, and currently, right now, we're in, our curriculum is being used by 18 high schools in Iowa. And
wow,
we hope to build on that, but just want to let you know that resources that you provide are going out to kids everywhere, and, even here in Iowa. So, thank you for that.
Oh, thank you. And that is so important, to have curriculum that's inclusive of people. In New Jersey, it just became law that they now have to, as of the start of this school year, which is a very strange school year because of COVID, but all schools, high schools, I believe, need to include a curriculum of LGBTQ history and literature. And I think that that's key. I think we need curriculum that is inclusive of all differences. Any marginalized difference, which is really key. Thank you. And what was your name again?
Wade Peterson.
Wade, because it says Des Moines Gay, and I guess it's Men's Chorus.
Yeah.
It's last, yeah. Okay. And you're Wade. Thank you, Wade.
Are there other questions or comments? I guess I would interject one, Jane. We've been through some interesting times here in the last 3.5 years, with a president that seems somewhat prone to bullying. I'm curious to hear from you sort of what connections you may see in the implicit permission for bullying that his behavior may have caused, and whether you have seen any connections that you can discern, that you can pinpoint, that that reflect his giving people implicit permission to do bullying. Can you comment on that?
Sure. So I do like to make it clear that we are a nonprofit organization that does not take political sides or endorse or support any candidates at all. Because I don't want to lose my nonprofit status. So prefacing
and we're the same. That. We are the
but
same.
With that said, there is research, I guess, I think right out of the University of Virginia, that was done in 2016, 2017. I guess it was 17, based on the results of watching a leader on our screens coming into our homes every day, who were humiliating and targeting people with disabilities, reporters with disabilities, saying whatever kind of came out of his mouth. And there was a spike and a rise in bullying in youth. So youth are watching and they're hearing it. And we need leaders that are going to come into our homes daily on the screens that we watch, whatever the were big or small, that exemplify good behavior and not target other people and humiliate them. And I definitely see that correlation of that normalization of aggressive behavior and self-centeredness of just saying what's on your mind and attacking everyone around you. If things, especially the more you feel like you're being pushed into a corner, I think the more aggressive you get, which is why bullying is a mental health situation, because oftentimes it's hurt people who hurt other people. And that power imbalance and wanting to have all that power and influence over other people is certainly being watched, and our youth are learning how, and normalizing that behavior. And it's not a good part of, and it definitely has increased and the need for work, like from our organization and from the Des Moines Gay Men's Chorus and from so many other organizations. We can't have enough voices, I think, speaking into this space to create safe, kind, respectful environments.
I would say the same caveat about First Friday Breakfast Club. We're a 501c3 and we don't endorse candidates, that kind of thing. But the reality is that we're all involved in politics. If you've got two teenagers in one car, there are politics. And I have seen in the polling the suggestion that the president has been losing support among suburban women, not just suburban housewives, suburban women. And it has occurred to me that it is possible that a part of that loss is the fact that there are moms out there that are trying to teach their children the appropriate way to relate to other people. And that doesn't include bullying. And then the kid sees what's happening with the president and mom's got to try and explain, well, I can't do that. The president can. How does that work, mom? And I can see that really being a frustration, particularly for women who are mothers and particularly mothers of young children that are still in their formative years, getting that message, the contrary message, broadcast daily almost, and needing to explain to their children, now that is not okay. That's not the way you're supposed to behave. Listen to Mrs. Trump.
Right. Although her voice hasn't been very loud in that.
It has not been very loud.
Pick that as her initiative, but I don't know. But yeah. I think it's even can even go one ring out in that we're gonna need someone that can bridge all these differences, because to me, watching the election poll, my own personal opinion is that there's a huge divide in this country. I mean, and I must admit, I guess I lean towards one candidate, and I think of how could somebody vote for that other candidate? And yet many, many people did. And I have to check myself and saying, these are good people. They're not people that want to intentionally harm my family, my son. I, as you said, I have three children and I don't think I included it, but my older son is gay as well. So he and his husband just recently moved back to New Jersey from Brooklyn, which you might think from where you are is really close, but it really isn't. Now they're 20 minutes away. It's really, really nice. So I'm really, really happy. So I know that those people don't intentionally want to harm my son and son-in-law, but yet by voting for that person, they are, you know, and I live in a very, diverse community and I have many friends who are black and brown and all different shades. And by voting for another candidate, I think those people are racist and they're inciting anger and he's inciting anger and they're supporting that anger. And I have to check myself and saying, no, they probably have an issue that is near and dear to them. And that's why they voted for that person. And they're not bad people. And we have to try to find our commonality and bridge that difference. Because for the good of our country, which I am very proud of my country and I want to stay here. I don't want to move out of the country, but you know, there's a lot of things to keep in mind and it's not just about two candidates. It's about all the people that are supporting those two candidates.
And it seems to me that one thing that we need to be emphasizing and you and your foundation is doing it is the value, the strength of diversity. And we need to, and that includes appreciation for all of the various protected characteristics that the law provides, because those are really not minorities. Those things are universal. I mean, everyone either has a religion or wants to be free from it. Everyone's got a gender. Everyone has a race and an ethnic background. Those are universal. And at some point, I can testify, you'll even become handicapped at some point. I mean, those are universals. They are true of everybody. And so it becomes really important to get that appreciation for diversity out there and diversity training and teaching accomplished as well. Are there any other comments or questions? Anyone?
Yes, I wanted just to say that, Gene, maybe you want to reach out to Republican Senator Toomey of Pennsylvania. He's just announced support for the voting being free of fraud and that the claims of the president and his bullying attempts of the American voters is unfounded. So maybe he's an inroad toward your cause as an upstander.
Thank you. That might be a good person to reach out to.
Any other comments or questions? All right. If not, Jane, I want to thank you so much for your participation. I want to express to you on behalf of all of the participants here, our sincere condolences for the loss of Tyler at such a young and early age. What you have demonstrated is the reputation of mother bears. Mother bears are notorious. If you harm or threaten one of their cubs, they go nuts and they really tear you apart and they'll ask questions later. And you have demonstrated, the real truth of that reputation of mother bears. And, what you're doing is tremendously powerful. And we will hope to link up with the foundation and make sure that resource is on our webpage, and let people know in that way. It has been tremendous to have you speaking to us and taking advantage of this virtual meeting capability that we have. I sincerely express my appreciation to you for your participation. It was excellent.
Thank you. I just saw that there were comments in the comment bar, and I'm not sure. It's hard to present and listen. So if there's somebody that said something and I didn't address it, I'm sorry. Oh, there's the gay men's chorus. Okay. I should probably copy this and then read it later.
And someone has posted it. Yeah. Okay.
Yes, and that's our website right there, Dave. Thank you, Steve, for putting that up. I appreciate that.
Perfect. Yes, and someone has posted the quote, we can disagree and still love each other unless your disagreement is rooted in my oppression and denial of my humanity and right to exist. And that was by James Baldwin.
James Baldwin. I knew. I just couldn't think of it. My mind just, I don't know, I'm getting too old. My mind forgets names.
Now, if you throw it out there, one of our members is likely to
yes, to that's better. It. I just think it speaks so perfectly to the issues. You know, we want to all have the right to speak, but should we all? that I'm not sure of.
Well, thank you again, Jane. And I want to thank everyone who is participating today. I'll remind you that we will be having another meeting. It will also be virtual on December the 4th. Our speaker for that meeting is Roman Borsellino. He is the son of Rob Borsellino and the son of Rekha Basu. Rob Borsellino is deceased. He was a well-recognized, well-known columnist here in Des Moines with the Des Moines Register. And Rekha Basu, his spouse, also is still today a columnist for the Des Moines Register. And her son is the co-creator and executive producer of Cal Penn approves this message on the television. The Walt Disney television. And he is the co-producer, creator and co-producer of that particular film. And he's going to be our speaker next on December the 4th. And don't tell anyone, but as a surprise to him, we've gotten Rekha Basu to agree to come on the meeting and introduce her son when it's time for him to speak. And then we'll be having a meeting on January the 8th. It will also be a virtual meeting. January the 8th is not actually the first Friday, but it felt like the first Friday, which is January the 1st, wasn't just the best time to have an early morning meeting. So our meeting in January is going to be on January the 8th. Our speaker is going to be Eric Marcus, and he is the producer of a podcast, Making Gay History. He's the author of a dozen books, including Breaking the Surface, the autobiography of Greg Louganis. So he is going to be our speaker in January, and we're lining up our speakers as well for February and March, and we've got those in the process right now. But we'll look forward to your participation again on December the 4th when we meet again. And thanks again to everybody for participating in our meeting today.
Thank you. And tell Eric I said hello. I haven't talked with him in a few years, but.
We'll do that. Very good.
Thank you so much, everyone. Reach out in an email if you have anything else to say. Thanks.
Thank you, Jane.
Thank you.